The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. The United Nations Commission on Narcotic Drugs held its 64th annual session recently. 5 days of plenary sessions involving the top drug control, law enforcement, and public health officials from many nations. This year, for the first time, the side events were live-streamed. These panels and presentations are held in Vienna at the same time as the CND. There are so many that several get held simultaneously. First up, the Transnational Institute organized an event entitled The Future of Cannabis in the Caribbean. Here's Faith Graham. She's the CEO of the Jamaican government's Cannabis Licensing Authority.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. I'm so happy to be here to share. I'm anticipating from a robust regional cannabis industry. And, you know, I just wanted to really congratulate our Caribbean counterparts for their for launching their regimes and so on. St. Vincent, my heart goes out to you. You know, we know that you will bounce back because we can hear the resilience in your voice on alone. You know, so just want to acknowledge Antigua and Barbuda, St. Vincent and the Grenadines, Barbados, Trinidad and Tobago for their regime. Trinidad and Tobago recently launched their cannabis control bill and invited our comments on it. And that is like the beginning of partnership. We have also been having information sharing sessions with Barbados, which is very good for the industry and for the region, you know, because through these discussions, we can find ways to tap into that hegemony that we speak of. Implementation of the legal medical cannabis industry. Well, in Jamaica, our legislation, the Dangerous Drugs Act, was amended in 2015 to establish the CLA. And the CLA has since promulgated interim regulations to manage the industry. And we are responsible for both hemp and ganja. Now, we issue 5 license types at this time, and up to date, we have issued 78. We have cultivators licenses, processing licensing, retail, herb houses, research and development licenses, and transportation licenses. Now, we have made provision in our interim regulations for inclusion of the small farmers, small subsistence farmers, and of course, we can't leave out traditional farmers. We kind of make a subtle distinction there in terms of the genesis of the different cultivations. Now, Jamaica, the provisions that we've made in our existing regulations include allowing applicants to be cooperatives and friendly societies. You know, we know that financing is usually a challenge, so we have provision for waivers and deferment of fees and even payment plans. In the Caribbean region, we have land ownership challenges always. And what we have sought to do through our regulation is to allow persons to use land once we can get statutory declarations to say that they have claim to this land. And also if they have consent of the owner of the land to use the land. So that is how we enable access without even having the certificate of title. Of course, the law makes provision for expungement. So a lot of our traditional farmers might have had run-ins with the law because of even simple possession of ganja, as we call it, and would have excluded them otherwise. So the expungements really do tap into that after a certain period of time. No, notwithstanding all of these provisions, we find that there are challenges and to access, mainly stemming from the ability to access financing because of the correspondent banking issues that still are prominent in the cannabis industry. The banks are de-risking and therefore do not want to support cannabis businesses. So they'll tell us in principle they support the industry, but at the same time, they're not willing to risk their correspondent banking relationships that they have with the United States and even the insurance companies too. So we're looking also testing and standards. These are things that can exclude persons. So, of course, what we have sought to do, because they are necessary for safe consumption, both locally and abroad, where the authority has made significant progress in partnering with others to enable testing. And also, our local Bureau of Standards has promulgated 7 standards for the industry, which we are seeking to incorporate in our regulations. We have now taken another approach to the inclusion issue for the small subsistence farmers, being that the provisions thus far, the uptake has not been great. And so we have recently conceptualized a cultivator's transitional special permit, which is specifically geared towards small subsistence farmers as an avenue to get them into the medical cannabis industry. What it will do, they will be issued with a permit, which will allow them to enter the industry, but at reduced cost and reduced infrastructural build-out, whilst maintaining all the security requirements. So the cost factor is what is prohibitive, and this permit, it has cut it in half for them, cut the price of the license in half, cut down the infrastructural requirements, and they are able to trade with other licensees, And we expect that over a 24-month period, they will incrementally matriculate to becoming a full licensee. And this is not a renewable permit, so that they have to. We'll provide the guidance with them to help them to get to that point. Now, if we see them approaching their 24-month period and not being able to matriculate, then we have the discretion to give them an additional 6 months to complete their transition process. And by the end of that process, they should be able to be a cultivator's tier one licensee, which would have the full benefit of license, which would cause them to be able to export, among other things. Now, are there signs that we are moving away from medical cannabis? Well, from the medical cannabis regime? Well, Jamaica at this point is not seeking to move away from the medical cannabis regime. But what we have done, we have accepted and acknowledged issues of social justice and human rights. We, of course, through the amendments, we allow the use of sacramental use of cannabis by Rastafarians. That's a human rights issue, which is governed by our Ministry of Justice. And of course, decriminalization of the possession of small quantities, which is a social justice issue, because we find that a lot of our young people would have been, you know, totally disadvantaged because of a simple spliff, as we call it here. Right. And so we believe that though there are economic benefits to be gained through the medical cannabis industry, so we don't necessarily have to depart from that regime to tap into that economic space. What we think is best is that we focus on how to enable the industry and maximize the opportunities that reside within the medical cannabis regime. And in so doing, we have now recognized that our interim regulations will certainly need overhauling for more ease of doing business. It will also include additional income streams for the authority, right? We're about to promulgate import-export regulations, which will also provide access to other markets, which will help us. We have first draft of our hemp regulations, and for us, hemp is just for medical purposes. So the cannabinoid profile of it, 1% or less THC, of course, and 10% or more CBD, because that is what we're doing it for. And we have chosen that threshold so that we can, as a medical industry that we're promoting for CBD in hemp, right? So we don't do industrial hemp because of the inherent risks of cross-pollination. And we're very small in Jamaica. To cross-pollination is a risk to both the hemp and ganja industries. So in so doing, we have chosen to put in that threshold. We're also seeking to strengthen the regulatory framework to allow for authorizations and permits, also another income earner for the country and, of course, for the people. And during COVID, we had to develop an online sales policy for the retail herb houses, right? And even beyond COVID, it will become something that is necessary as the industry is evolving. So while we're not departing from medical, we are maximizing what we can do. So we're looking now to develop a policy to augment the online sales policy that we have, a policy for deliveries. Now, our regime as it is, it restricts trade amongst licensees. our industry has expanded, has grown beyond that now. So we are now seeking to find ways to extend trade outside of that, what we call the closed loop system, to increase access to other markets and so on, to include others in the industry. So, of course, in order to increase this global access, then we have to, of course, do our regulations for import-export. The standards are absolutely necessary. We'll be seeking to incorporate some of those into our regulatory framework as well. Good agricultural practices, good manufacturing practices, among several others. And product diversification, of course. The whole matter of nutraceuticals, some say edibles. We believe that we need to recognize traditional ganja or cannabis as traditional medicine, and we can do this through a nutraceutical market, which would include but not be limited to tinctures, topical treatments, sublingual applications, teas, etc. Right? And the recent decision to remove cannabis from the Schedule 4, we believe it is legitimized cannabis in so many more ways, because now it's recognized by the right bodies that cannabis has this medicinal value. And so what we have seen is an increase in demand locally for expansion of this space. So that is why even more so now, we would need to increase the supply chain by trading outside of that closed loop system, focusing on, of course, CBD, and expanding the class of medical practitioners that may prescribe or recommend cannabis for medical purposes. We must recognize our local herbalists or naturopath practitioners, because they can be recognized and should be recognized in law to be able to prescribe cannabis for medical purposes.
Okay. Faith, can you begin to wrap it up, please? It's fascinating.
Sure. Right. So research and development is the way that we think the region ought to go for the whole idea of hegemony and so on, and of course intellectual property.
That was Faith Graham, CEO of the Jamaican government's Cannabis Licensing Authority. She was speaking on a panel entitled The Future of Cannabis in the Caribbean that was organized by the Transnational Institute and held at the annual session of the Commission on Narcotic Drugs. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Vicky Hansen is a PhD candidate in public policy at the Department of Government, University of the West Indies. She's on the board of directors for the International Drug Policy Consortium, and she's also with the International Center for Cannabis Research.
Thank you. Good morning, colleagues. Good afternoon, wherever you are. I want to pick up from some of the points made by both Gerald and Faith in their presentation this morning, because as we have mentioned, and let me start by sending out thoughts to our brothers and sisters in St. Vincent and the Grenadines, and by extension, those in Barbados and St. Lucia, who are also affected by La Soufriere volcano. And we are looking at the future of cannabis in the Caribbean, based on where we were before in terms of the Waiting to Exhale report. And for me, two of the main points that I want to focus this presentation on has to do with our environmental conditions and considerations that the report pointed out was something that is key, which we are now living in this time as it relates to the volcanic eruption in St. Vincent. And in last November, we here in Jamaica had our own environmental conditions as it relates to our rainfall and storm that affected our small traditional growers. And one of the things that we have learned from this experience that will impact how we go forward with our own regulation of cannabis in the Caribbean is that we are indeed environmentally vulnerable, especially our small traditional growers. We have traditional growers who are using land that are in areas that are not good for farming, much less for cannabis farms. And so we have a situation in St. Vincent now where traditional farmers who have been farming in unsuitable conditions now have to run, leave their crops. Their livelihoods are now being destroyed because of cultivating in a space that is very volatile. So they are now displaced. Does the current regulatory framework help to take those into consideration? I know Ms. Graham just mentioned the whole matter of land and land availability, access to land. That is something that the report spoke to in 2018 that still remains with us, even in our medical framework. So we have to look at making the amendments to our various legislation to provide access to small traditional farmers, and if we want to call them small farmers. It is more than saying to them, we will give you permission to use the land. They also will have to go to some big landowner to get that permission. So we have to look at how we regulate in that space and treat with that. Again, another issue, the way of growing. I think Gerald mentioned the good agricultural practices. One of the things that is needed from our small traditional farmers is adequate upskilling of how they do their agricultural practices. Because what we're seeing, both in Jamaica, both in St. Vincent and the Grenadines, if they can't meet certain standards by virtue of that alone, they are also excluded from a medicinal industry. Which brings me, and I'm glad to hear Faith Graham of Jamaica mentioning, looking at how we regulate and regulating for health, but and to know that we have a certain practice within the Caribbean and other cultural practice that sees and accepts the traditional medicines. Now, that is an area that is still not clear, and it still leaves our naturopaths or folk medicines not being accepted in a really solid way. And if we're serious about medicinal or cannabis for medicinal use, the whole matter of cultural medicine and cultural identified practices must be taken into consideration in our regulation of the cannabis industry going forward. But do we really have just a medicinal cannabis industry in the Caribbean? The truth is, no, we have a cultural industry as well. We have a sacramental industry. Do we leave it vaguely? So we need to also take into consideration elements of our UN Convention that speaks to our rights, our cultural rights, and our human rights as it relates to cultural rights. And so there must be a space. There must be more than just to say Rastafari is given sacramental use to just use this in their space. Can I trade my sacramental plant? So there must be a recognition that there is a cultural space that goes beyond just traditional medicine and sacrament, but a cultural use of the plant in its all its forms. So and that is one of the things that our report from the Marijuana Commission pointed out, that there needs to be a serious conversation in the Caribbean as it relates to recognition of cultural rights, human rights to use. And then when we are regulating, do we do like Jamaica and you split across the regulation of cannabis and leave Ministry of Justice to deal with the sacrament and the justice issue? No, because it goes back to the old getting involved in the industry. While I can get my record expunged for small quantities that I will use for my sacramental use, why not get my record expunged for larger cultivation so that I can seriously enter an industry and build a legitimate livelihood? And these are some of the concerns that we would have highlighted from our report that we did on the review of the licensing regime in 2020 in Jamaica. These were some of the points that came out. A few of the points, in the interest of time, I wouldn't be able to go through, but those are some of the points that have been highlighted by the small traditional growers. They want that space. And it has been, those points have been reiterated in many reports. Even another report done by Martin and yourself, Dave and Sylvia, that spoke to dealing with that issue of the UN treaties and their acceptance of certain rights, cultural rights, dealing with the regulatory challenges as well, that talks about the banking issues, which I think Ms. Graham had just mentioned in her own presentation, and also facilitating and supporting the growth and the organization of the growers, the traditional growers. We need to have frameworks in place that will support the growth and organization of these communities. I know Gerald in St. Vincent, they have the transitional license with the CRC, which is the Cannabis Revival Committee. So it is bringing these organizations into the discussion about how we regulate for the future, because the future is built on their inclusion in it.
That was Vicki Hansen with the International Center for Cannabis Research. She was speaking on a panel entitled The Future of Cannabis in the Caribbean that was organized by the Transnational Institute and held at the annual session of the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Here's Peen Mittal. She's a senior project officer with the Transnational Institute.
I would like to use this opportunity to present a new report that the Transnational Institute has made. It's called Sustainable Future for Cannabis Farmers, Alternative Development Opportunities in the Legal Cannabis Market, which is quite relevant for this discussion on the future of cannabis in the Caribbean, but also in other parts of the world. After more than 50 years of policies that pretend to find a solution to cannabis cultivation as a result of its prohibition, not too much has changed. As you will find in the report in detail, the early ideas around crop substitution during the 1960s in countries such as Lebanon and Morocco have fed into policies of alternative development and shared responsibilities. Two concepts that have evolved around the question how cannabis cultivators until this could be provided with an alternative livelihood until this very day in the UN. What this report shows is the immense gap between theory and practice, and the hard fact that AD in its current form has not worked and will not work for overwhelming majority of communities involved in this kind of cultivation. The report argues it is time for change and that this discussion now needs to be revised given the change in circumstances. Although prohibition has not ended, an increasing number of countries around the world are challenging the global regime by allowing a legal outlet for cannabis. We argue in this report these changes should provide a part of the answer for the issue at stake. A sustainable future for cannabis farmers requires their involvement in the emerging and fast developing medical cannabis industry. The rich history of cannabis and its use around the world is reflected in this report, which has always been a very effective and useful resource for people until its prohibition changed that fate. In historical terms, this delusion is based on confusion and moral opinions more than on science and on logic, and now is finally starting to be repaired, although the looming danger of a complete pharmaceutical capture is unfortunately quite real. And the only way to prevent this from happening lies in the hands of our policymakers. This report was a joint effort of several authors, led by the program director Martin Jelsma. It describes the extent of the subsistence economies, seen from the perspective of all global traditional communities that are involved in the cultivation of the plant. It provides analysis of all regions in the world, from Asia, Africa, Latin America, and the Caribbean, and gives an overview of the newest developments of policies for legal cannabis regulatory frameworks around the world. An interesting perspective that has surfaced in some countries is the concept of alternative development with cannabis, which was actually inspired by the Bolivian model for development with coca. We argue in this report that trading cannabis must become inclusive, a fair trade, in order to address the issue of poverty and the marginalization of communities now facing economic hardships. One chapter in this report will inform the reader on the risk of corporate capture of the global medicinal cannabis market that the global medicinal cannabis market is now facing, and what an inclusive business at the global and the global value chain offer in terms of an alternative that will help build a fairer trade and sustainable development. Aiming at finding a broader perspective on the matter of rural development, the report also reflects an attempt to grasp the dynamics of agrarian change. How does land, labor, and capital interact with cannabis production? And to what extent the environmental impact of cannabis cultivation can be appreciated and dealt with? Furthermore, it must be obvious for most that questions around identity, race, and gender are also relevant to this change. So these are also included in this report. Policy changes and the fast-growing legal cannabis market may offer new opportunities for small farmers to transition into legality, although to date, there has been little progress in this regard. Barriers to entry are high and few protective legislative measures provide preferential access to small producers. The reality is that the billion-dollar medicinal cannabis market has been captured by big corporations, and that the emerging legally regulated markets for non-medical, recreational, use are strictly based on an import substitution model, pushing out the previous suppliers from traditional producing countries. If the regulation trend continues to move in this direction, the livelihoods of millions of small farmers in the South are at risk. This report argues that the international community needs to acknowledge that alternative development in its original sense of shifting to other lucrative crops and income sources is no longer a viable policy perspective for cannabis, if it ever was. The report will give you some concrete suggestions for alternative development with cannabis, making use of the new opportunities offered by the expanding legal cannabis markets. We, of course, highly recommend you to read this report, and we are looking forward to receiving your feedback.
That was Peen Mittal. She's a senior project officer with the Transnational Institute. She was speaking on a panel entitled The Future of Cannabis in the Caribbean that was organized by the Transnational Institute and held as a side event at the 64th annual session of the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs in Vienna, Austria. We'll have more from the CND next week. For now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Century of Lies. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy reform and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.